up, everybody? Welcome to IsCast. Yeah. IsCast.
That's pronounced IsCast.
Thank you, sir. IsCast number 15. We got me, David, Wade.
Yo.
Ben and Sean.
Hello. And surprisingly, and we're still on the air.
We are still on the air.
We are still on the internet.
This is our episode 15. We're now sitting on with, 2 feet of snow on the ground
and
or so?
Minus 9 degrees outside Fahrenheit. Woo-hoo. Life couldn't be better here in Minnesota.
Oh, yes.
We're going to kick it off here with talking about the latest short film we produced called Vertical. The name was given Vertical. It was named Vertical because it's basically making fun of all the people who shoot video on their phones vertically and how eventually in the future that's going to affect Hollywood and how films are shot and projected. Mm-hmm. The joke being that traditional filmmakers like Steven Spielberg resisted the movement and clung to the old way of shooting, and new and crazy and ambitious filmmakers like James Cameron decided to jump on that bandwagon, and now it's the only way they can tell their stories is in stunning tall screen.
Yes, it's funny.
Expertly played by Ben.
Yes, indeed. And it's funny that you would come up with this idea originally, Wade, mm-hmm. and you wrote the script that went through some refinements and we went to shooting, and the week we were shooting, 4 or 5 other PSA or shorts about.
I noticed that on Reddit.
There was something in the water.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But it's funny how those little coincidences can come up with that.
Well, and it was interesting, about maybe a week or two after that whole, our short came out, and everybody else's little PSAs came out about it. There's an app that came out on the iOS App Store that you can still hold your phone vertically.
Oh, and it shoots horizontally.
But it shoots
horizontally. But of course it decreases the quality.
Yeah, yeah, it's cropping it, sort of.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But no, it was great. We got to use the Canon C100 to shoot. We shot at Cinequip's studio, which was a lot of fun. They have this big white space with a curved wall to floor.
It was so bizarre.
And you don't know where the shadows are. You don't know where the corner is.
It's really changing. You'll just be walking, and that the wall is curved, mm-hmm. but you can't see the curve, especially when it's lit.
Yeah.
Because it all washes out. And if you watch in the short, we use it in the beginning and the end, and it just looks like the white oblivion. Mm-hmm. That
it's
is
brilliant. A lot of people thought we green screened it. But no,
really?
No green screen, baby.
Yeah, I know.
I think a lot of times the culture just assumes things are green screened just automatically,
Yeah.
If there's a strange background that doesn't seem very natural, oh, it's green screen.
Yeah.
But we got to use their awesome jib arm, a C100, which is a lot of fun. Their awesome Cinema Prime lenses. And that was my first time shooting with a full frame sensor camera, and it was awesome. The following week after we delivered this short, David and I went to do the shoot. We were hired by the ELCA to shoot B-roll at a local church. We rented Cinema Prime lenses, but we used my T3i, my mm-hmm. Canon,
yeah.
which is a crop sensor. And I compared the footage shot from the C100 and the T3i, and I texted David afterwards. I said, after looking at the T3i, I'm like, was this shot on a phone?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy how big a difference that is.
Yeah.
So for me, being non-technical, could you explain the difference between the full frame and everything?
Whenever I think about the difference, I think about my astronomy class and talking about different telescopes. Mm-hmm. The better telescopes are bigger. They have a wider diameter, right? And the reason, it's the same idea. It's because it's like
you're capturing more light.
And the example they used in that class was if you have a big cylinder outside and it's collecting snow, the only way you can, the snow is the same everywhere. It's going to be the same depth. If you want to capture more snow, you get a bigger dish, and it's the same with light. If you want to capture more light, you get a bigger area for the light to hit. So the bigger sensor, the more light you're getting. The light is always constant, so. Mm. That's how you get more information.
And how does that affect the final picture?
Wait, I'm sorry. The C100 is not full frame.
Yes, it is. Remember?
It's Super 35.
Oh, this guy.
It's Super 35. Super 35 and full frame are two different things. I'm nervous now. I'm going to fact check
this up. Do you remember we were shooting in the auditorium, the theater location, and we had this kind of spat back and forth. Remember that?
No, because I thought it was APS-C sized.
No, it's not. You thought it was, and then we argued about it.
I know.
Pulled the specs on B&H.
But full frame and Super 35 are two different sensor sizes. Full frame is like a 5D.
Okay, well, we'll investigate.
Yeah, but I'll pull this up and I'll shut up for a few minutes.
Anyway, But it was a lot of fun. We got to shoot at a lot of fun locations and play dress up. And it's a super 35 millimeter sensor.
Okay, which is not the same as full frame.
Okay, so can you please explain the difference?
Yes, I can. Full frame is bigger.
How much bigger?
It's probably about, if I'm remembering my scale correctly, I don't know, 30 or 40% bigger.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, full frame is really big, and that's one of the things that aids with like the 5D and why it's a still popular camera, because you're getting such a large sensor area. Your depth of field is fantastic. You know, and there's nothing wrong with Super 35, though. You know, it's the same, about the same size as a piece of the negative size of a piece of.
See, I thought that's what full frame was. I thought full frame was the size of a 35 millimeter print.
No, it's two different things. The full frame's bigger.
Dude, you're crazy.
No,
you're rocking my world here.
So does that make it easier to shoot in low light?
Or yes, exactly. It's a lot easier to shoot in low light. You get a lot, the ISO on a camera, you know, the further you push the ISO, the more you're trying to get from the sensor, and the grain builds up. And so the bigger sensor, the less you have to push the ISO to get more detail out of the low light. And so that's one of the benefits. But anyway, it was, you're going to show.
Yeah, I'm going to show a chart. And to all you listeners, you can imagine me showing you a chart. So we have at the top of this one, this is the Super 35.
Okay.
Right in red.
Where's the APS?
APS-C is right down here.
Okay. So it's pretty close to Super 35.
But then you can see here's the 5D full frame.
Yeah, I see.
See, you know, it's probably about, about 30% bigger.
All right. Well, can everyone just let the record show that David was right, and he's always right, and will never be wrong.
That's right.
My fingers are crossed.
Noted.
It's now permanent. It's on the internet now. It's forever. You'll never be able to get rid of that statement.
Right. Anyway.
But it is great using that camera. And also, you know, the Canon look is a really nice one.
It is.
We did notice that and of course, we weren't getting really deep into all the C100 stuff. We were giving a lot of things on sort of the default settings and just sort of working with it.
Mm-hmm.
And we found I think you were saying it was a little on the flat side when we got it into post.
Oh yeah,
and which isn't a bad thing. Yeah. You know, we have to do color correcting and everything.
The C100 line, I guess, of cameras, the 300 and 500.
Cinema EOS line.
They have a very specific Canon gamma curve, and it's weird because when you shoot it, it looks pretty good, and you put it into your NLE of choice, and the colors are very non-saturated, low contrast. It looks very unfinished on purpose because they expect you to go in and color grade afterwards. And so I had to. You have to go in and use DaVinci or you know, whatever you're using to grade and really make the colors pop. Otherwise, it looks really bad.
Yeah.
Which is funny because, you know,
it's unusable.
You'll have like the T3i is pretty entry level. And so it has a built-in recording preset to make it look, you know, a little more high contrast and nicer looking out of the gate. But of course, if you want that the wider range to work with, you have to change the settings. So more work, but I think better in the end.
Yeah, it definitely was our best looking short that we've ever shot. You know, totally. If you look at the other stuff, if you look at where we've gone since, for example, T-20,
exactly,
which our first short that we did on
with the T3i.
And that one is also, it looks weird because like there was some magnification that we had on.
I just got the camera and couldn't figure out how to change the magnification setting. It was like x3 magnification the whole time we shot it.
Yeah, that's why it looks a little weird.
Digital zoom. Yeah, it was bizarre. Mm-hmm. So that was the latest short we did. Right now we're doing a lot of work for clients. It's a busy part of the season, but
real quick about Vertical, if you'd like to watch Vertical, you can head to YouTube and search for Intersection Studios, and you'll find our YouTube channel, or you can like us on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Got a little advertising there.
Oh, and Twitter. We're on that too.
And we're on Twitter at Intersection
Studios. Our shameless promotion wouldn't be complete unless we provided, Google Plus, but not really. Okay. So next we're going to move into gadgets. There's a lot of new gadgets coming out, a lot of awesome things to talk about. First, we have the Kickstarter slider.
Yeah, it was a fun slider that I came across the other day when I was at work. And you know, when I'm at work, one of the things I do is I peruse a lot of the film tech websites to see like what are the newest announcements, what's coming out. And I found a really interesting one, which was the Axis 360 slider, is what it's called. You can find it on Kickstarter right now. And it's this fascinating rig that there's sort of three tiers of it. There's the base tier, which is and this is all computer controlled via a custom controller. It's not like you don't plug it into your computer, but there's a custom controller, and it's a motorized pan motor. So, you know, if you need to do, you know, if you're doing time lapses, you know, a nice simple pan, there's that. You can upgrade that, and you can add tilt to it as well. So it's a full pan tilt. And then you can get a full slider for it that's a motorized slider. So it and it looks like it's going to cost.
It looks very modular.
Yeah, it really is. And I think if you get it, you know, fully spec'd out, you're going to be putting down, like when it goes on sale, you can get it a little bit cheaper if you donate to the Kickstarter. But when it goes on sale, it's going to be about $1,900. And, you know, that is unbelievably inexpensive for a fully motorized computer controlled sliding setup. And, you know, and the footage they were showing was amazing. They had one setup where they had it underwater. They had part of the rig underwater and a GoPro strapped onto it.
It looks, for the tilts and everything, though, it looks like that might be restricted to DSLRs, however, just because of the weight.
It looks about that weight, yes, DSLR. So, like, I think, like, on the Blackmagic 4K, that's within tolerances of it. But, yeah, no, you couldn't put anything, like, you couldn't put a Red or a cinema camera on it.
The slider, the horizontal slider, you could probably fit something heavier on that.
That depends on the head.
Okay.
That's on it.
How long is the slider?
I believe it looks like around a 3-foot slider.
Okay.
Which is a pretty standard size.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A lot of times with shots that you're using a slider for, that's enough because that's enough space to work with because you're usually sliding very slowly and they're usually not long shots.
Yeah.
So
a lot of people, they think that like you need like a 12-foot long slider.
Oh, no.
Well,
no.
And
the one for the writer too. The Willie Rhino guys, they had the there are little wraparound cords. I mean, that's slightly different.
That's
though,
more of a dolly shot.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sliders are typically, a lot of them are establishing shots or time lapses, like you're saying. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for those, just a little movement. Mm-hmm. You don't need anything big. A dolly, that's a little more different. They were wrapping around action. And that's kind of an uncommon shot, I think. They were going for something a little more.
Yeah. And I know that, like, you know, they have a very interesting dolly system that like it runs on these rubber tubes, so you can wrap it and do designs with
but
it.
They had straight poles too.
But for the dolly bees, there's also like, you know, if you were to do that sort of a dolly around shot, excuse me, for something like that, like we have and like at Cinequip we have these absolutely stunning dollies called Fisher dollies. These are ones that like it's the point where you can't buy them, you can only rent or lease them from the company. And you know, it's a slider that, you know, has all this fascinating hydraulic works behind it for raising and lowering the camera, and I won't get into that. But you know, these dollies, if you were to be able to buy one, you'd probably be talking about $50,000 or $60,000 for this thing. Mm. But one of the cool things it does is all the four wheels on it, they can be set to do crab. So when you turn it, all four wheels turn in the same direction. So you can go directly from pushing forwards to turning the wheels and go sideways immediately. Or you can do arc, where all the four wheels turn in tandem, so that they will make a curve. So you can, and then you can set that, and then you can just keep going around in a stable.
I can't wait for the day when we need those abilities on our.
Oh, we should go to Cinequip sometime and do some stuff on them. The dollies are fascinating. Well, we'll have to post some photos when we do it. Like,
all right,
we'll find some time to do it.
So, moving along, the next gadget that I wanted to talk about. So, in this month's edition of Digital Video Magazine, they do these awesome articles where they review the newest toys to play with. This one I'm looking at here is a new light meter, the Seconix L478D light meter. It's
worst name for a light meter ever.
Yeah. It they rated it 4.5 out of 5 stars. It's a modern touchscreen. It has modern touchscreen control, great light sensitivity, and very accurate. And it's described as an excellent modern meter with some unique abilities and advanced touchscreen control. It goes for $399. And some of the highlights. It has, it, you know, can differentiate in the software between basically these presets for 24 frames per second and 23.976, although it's described as being impossible to distinguish on a lens. It still has that precision to you know, change that setting. And you can add 20 different customized frame rates between 1 and 1,000 frames per second for easy access. So it has a lot of cool different things you can play with on it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's interesting because with digital, not a lot of people carry light meters around, and some people just use apps on their phones for light meters, which I think
that's pushing it.
Yeah,
that's
maybe a guideline. I wouldn't use it on a professional shoot. It is kind of funny. It's like using a digital slate on your phone, although that's a little less. That's okay, I guess, because you're just clapping.
Yeah,
but that's more of a novelty, I think.
Yeah.
So that's really nice.
Light metering is overlooked, and especially it's going to be interesting to see where the need for light metering goes with RAW, when there becomes so much that you can change afterwards.
So So then do you not, or do many people not use it on digital shoots just because it's not as advantageous or because it's so necessary for film and you don't necessarily need it for
digital? Because like with film, like you're having to, you have to take your reading so you can set your f-stop.
Right. So I'll give you an example. Social. So when you're looking through the viewfinder of a film camera, you can see kind of what it looks like and you can definitely set up your composition. But with things like focus and exposure, you're supposed to use instruments to precisely measure it, because if it looks okay through the eyepiece, it doesn't mean that's how it's going to be exposed on the film. So it could look fine in the eyepiece and you could get the film negatives back and it can look terrible. So that's why you need instruments like this so it exposes properly. And so you enter in the speed of the film you're shooting at and all that stuff, the lens, you know, the measurements in the lens.
But because you're working with digital, you can review it quickly.
That, and also basically when you're shooting,
you see is what you get.
Yeah. What you see is what you get.
That's why like on film sets, there was the whole saying, check the gate. It's because when you're looking through the eyepiece, you're not seeing what the film is seeing. You're actually seeing when the shutter is in a certain position, you're seeing the reflected image off a mirror up into the eyepiece. Whereas so you're seeing that reflection. So you need to check the gate because you need to make sure there's not hair or dust or something that's in there that could have been affecting the film. Whereas in digital, because it's all, you know, a digital sensor, digital signals, you see through the eyepiece exactly what you are going to see.
Yeah.
And maybe not say again, you're not seeing the same quality, you know, maybe out of focus, but if there's a hair on the lens or on the sensor, you'll see that
right
in the viewfinder.
That's not to say, and I'm glad these are coming out because light mirrors are still really advantageous for shooting digitally. For example, on vertical with the C100 and Blackmagic even, sometimes, if you guys hear a stampede, there's a dog in the background. We're not getting, the house isn't being blown down or anything like that. So anyway, sometimes what you're seeing on the viewfinder isn't how it's going to look on your computer. For example, when we did our little Blackmagic test, the viewfinder looked much different than how it was brought into DaVinci.
Yeah, definitely.
And so even though with digital, you can still see what it's going to look like roughly, with the higher end cameras, it's really important to know your measurements precisely. So that's why it's really cool to have a device like this, I think.
Yeah.
Is it worth that expense?
Yes. And that's not...
It's only $399.
That's a really inexpensive light meter. Like, you can spend thousands on certain light meters. Yeah. And so, it's another thing about how the industry is changing, but also how technology has changed. We're able to make things cheaper and cheaper.
Yeah.
Which, you know, if you wanted to buy a light meter 40 years ago, you'd be putting probably a couple $1,000s down on it. And now, look, we can get one for $400.
Yeah, so that's a really nice one. You can go to Sekonic.com to learn more. The next one I want to talk about...
We were not paid for that advertisement.
No, we're just being helpful media artists. So the next one, I touched on this a little bit last episode. So a lot of the articles I'm seeing in this magazine specifically are about the kind of neck-and-neck race between all the big NLEs out right now. You've got Media Composer, Premiere, and Final Cut 10. And... One of the main benefits Final Cut 10 has is a lot of plugins are now coming out for it that allow it to do really awesome things. The one that was reviewed last month is called Core Melt by Slice X, powered by Mocha. And what it allows you to do, it's this $149 MSRP. But no, on the website, there was a $99 deal. That's why it's kind of funny. So basically, it's a cheap plugin. And it allows you to do really, really quick and easy tracking, rotoscoping, and it has this really awesome filter to put over faces to remove blemishes really quickly, really easily, and it tracks very precisely with a touch of a button. I use it on vertical, and it works like a dream.
And that's especially useful for we don't always have the luxury of having a dedicated makeup costume person.
Right.
On set.
Which we needed, I think, because we did a lot of interview shots.
Yeah. We're learning.
Right. And while we were able to light the scenes really well, we didn't have makeup. And in professional interviews, you have makeup, not only soft light and everything, but you want your subjects and your interviewers to look really good. So this was a very valuable plugin. I downloaded the trial and used it, and it worked brilliantly. So that one, they gave a 5 out of 5 for its price and basically what you're getting. I've done tracking a lot in like motion and After Effects, and this was surprisingly accurate by just giving it an auto track. And it was great to work with. The third plugin is for, I didn't put it on the list. It's for motion. It's called Mobject.
Mobject, I think.
Mobject. And it's kind of like Element 3D for After Effects. Basically what you do, motion is Apple's title/compositor program. Not as capable as After Effects, understandably. It's only $50. But this plugin gives you a wealth of 3D models to put into motion. and you can animate them, and it has pre-rendered textures, and you can change the lighting on it, and it's I think it goes for the whole full thing's a few hundred dollars, but it's a really awesome plugin, and it's just great to see different companies competing with each other to get the best product out there. So that's when I was looking into. I was looking into either buying Element 3D or Mobject. We'll see which one I get in the end. But that's a really cool.
So you're
one.
Making this public pitch out to the world.
See, I don't know, because I love the Creative Suite, but I also love Final Cut 10, and so whatever allows me.
Yeah. Well, I just like the whole thing, and this goes into a lot of other DRM stuff for me. But I like the fact that for like Final Cut and stuff, I buy it and I own it.
Yes.
And it's mine, rather than I need to pay you a subscription fee.
The Creative Cloud,
to do that. I don't care for
they
that.
They don't
personally.
Let you buy besides the Creative Cloud anymore, I don't think. I thought that they did.
I don't think you do. If you want to get any other previous versions of Adobe, you have to buy it on eBay or something.
Yeah, so I'm with you, David. I would prefer to work that way.
Yeah.
Because, you know, maybe I'm not online and want to... Well, do you have to be online to use it, or can you work offline?
I think there's an offline...
I would hope so. That would
be online, but you are losing more money out of it. Like
In
the long run, for the consumer, it is more expensive. However, you can. I don't know if there is an upgrade fee.
No, there's not. I think it's just continual upgrade. So on the bright side, okay. I think you start the subscription and you never like you just pay that every month.
You can upgrade from your dedicated though to the cloud. Like you can the previous CS6 if you have it locally, you bought it locally. You can upgrade. There's a fee to upgrade it to the digital Creative Cloud, I think.
Okay, but one of the pitches I saw for Creative Cloud was that you're always using the most current version. So I don't know if there's a fee to.
I don't think so. It almost sounds like there won't be. It will only just be the Creative Cloud from now on. There's not going
to
be Creative
Which
Cloud 2.
Their answer to Final Cut 10, because since it was released almost 3 years ago, there hasn't been a fee to upgrade.
Yeah.
I've had it since the .1 release.
Yeah, which is also interesting because like they say in your terms of service that that's not a guarantee. They could charge you for it. I think they said like in it, like you will not pay for anything versions 10 through 10.9 or whatever.
Okay.
So there's a big thought. It's like, is there going to be a big thing for, or no, I'm sorry, 10 to 10.09. And so there's a big, are we going to have to pay $20 for the .1 update? But we didn't.
No. And now 10.1.1 is out.
And I think another thing to even go towards that is the fact that they didn't charge you to upgrade to Mavericks.
Yes.
I think there's a good chance at the end. Like, it seems that that model of having to pay every single time, it might be going
away. But Apple's able to do that because they're a hardware company, not a software company.
They make the majority
of their profit from their hardware and not their software.
Good old iPhone.
That doesn't mean they're not a software company.
Well, anyway, we'll see what happens in the future with them. So next up is the Blackmagic 4K competitors. There's been a few cameras that came out. David, you want to touch on?
Yeah, it's interesting because I think we talked about it last time, the Blackmagic 4K. But one thing that I know we wouldn't have talked about is previously it was going for $39.99, so called $4,000. And it was announced as shipping. And now they also dropped the price to $29.99.
$3,000 for a 4K camera.
Yeah, with global shutter.
With a global shutter.
And RAW. And 12
I'm
going to
repeat
RAW.
Everything you say.
Yes. And that's incredible. And the reason I think they did that is because, especially if you saw at CES last year and this year, 4K is coming, and it's coming quite quickly. Now, there's more flat panels that are 4K that are coming out there, and there are more cameras that are coming out there that are becoming more and more accessible to the consumer to shoot 4K. And so, like, the two new ones that came out are the Panasonic Lumix GH4, which is HDSLR style camera, but it's a 4K one. And then the other one that came out was a brand new, the Nikon D4S, which that one is not 4K if memory serves. But, you know, both of them, again, they're just getting more and more sophistication for a lower and lower price. Mm-hmm. And I think another big tell with that will be looking at NAB, which is coming up in 35 to 32 days or something. I'm excited for it. It's going to be fun.
Yeah.
I have a great update when I come back from that.
Yeah, and when you go to that, hopefully you can get more insight into what the climate's going to be like this year.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'm going to be stopping at all the major camera makers and probably a lot more that no one's ever heard of, and looking at those because, you know, again, you know, granted, at NAB, anything that's announced at NAB probably won't be hitting the shelves for another year.
So you said that the 4K production camera is out. Are they shipping? What's the deal with that?
It's the thing where I think there, you know, if you were perusing the Blackmagic forums in the recent months, there's getting to be a lot of Blackmagic hate going on. Okay. A lot of very angry customers who have, you know, put down their money and pre-ordered it, and they haven't gotten it yet. And it was supposed to be shipping end of quarter four last year.
Wow.
So, you know, it's only just shipping now.
So it is shipping.
It is shipping. It seems that they, I think from my guess, in the interest of getting it out there, they have sent it in an earlier build, basically, where right now it is not shipping with raw capabilities.
That's a software update.
Yep, so it's going to be a software update down the line. So I think it was a thing like, we just need to get it out, and need to get it out now. And I know, like, for the whole, I don't know how many cameras are in that first initial shipment. I know of however many hundreds, if not thousands, of orders in England, for example.
Oh, sure.
Only 6 cameras have gone to England.
Wow.
Right now, and again, I don't know how many went to England. And
so if we put our money down in a week or two to buy one, when would we get it?
I honestly don't know.
Okay.
I got nothing. And I know, like, Cinequipped, we are getting one in rental. And I know I'll be posting about that on our Facebook page. And, you know, as soon as we have it, I really want us to do a shoot with it.
Until then, you know, maybe we can get the 2K out.
We should definitely get that.
Because I'd like to use it again.
Yeah.
The 2K can't do ProRes, though, right?
It can.
Oh, it can.
Yeah, but the ProRes is 1080 only.
Well, so, I mean, it's not too far off from 2K.
What's ProRes?
It's a compression codec. Not really. Well, not a compression codec. It's a codec. Okay. It's Apple ProRes. It's still very popular, and it has scaled remarkably well.
You say it's not a compression codec?
Well, it is, but it is. No,
because I was going to ask David, what does codec mean?
Codec is basically the wrapper.
Where does the word come from?
I don't know. Codecs.
Codec, compression, decompression.
Nice. Oh, snap.
Nice. It is a compression. Oh, bam! Wow.
I just got laid the smackdown. Ouch. Oh, that's going to sting. Oh, you can't come to my party anymore.
Oh, snap. Okay, so anyway, yeah, I'd like to play with that some more.
Yeah.
Sean, any new gadgets in the world of electronic and sound media stuff?
Yes. I have some pretty cool information. What I've been diving into, I mix music, and I also have a video element alongside, you know, my music, and I'm huge into projecting images that coincide with the music I make, and projection mapping, pretty much pioneered by V Squared Labs, who does the Skrillex cell for the 2011 Skrillex cell. They did the Amon Tobin show in 2010. They've just set the bar for projection mapping, but the software that I use Grand VJ, recently released an upgrade to be able to do projection mapping. So I'm creating 3D objects like cubes or pyramids of cubes, and then creating multi-surfaces on the cube so I can send images, HD images, to these cubes and make them look as one.
So this is projecting onto 3D objects to make it look like what you're projecting is 3D.
With one projector.
Yep. Okay.
You're using one projector.
That sounds
to make
very
it
complicated.
Look 3D, yeah.
And this is all in software. So this isn't a fancy projector that lets you do this. It's just an off-the-shelf projector.
The software is the brains behind it. Yep. And I just use a couple of projectors, you know, nothing great. I 600 by 800 footage, and I'm trying to go.
And that's real time?
1024 real time. And I can, the thing I'm trying to do now is hook up a GoPro as a immediate web camera to interface into my software so I can project, you know, GoPro footage onto a 3D object. I think that's that cool. would be really neat.
That's really sweet.
Yeah. So that's kind of where I've been at, and
we need to have a party and have a look at this stuff, and we'll be able to post up some photos.
Oh, it'd be great.
Of this.
It'd be great.
What we're talking about.
You know what? There's actually a video. I didn't link it to our page, but there is a there was a video on this website I keep going back to, fcp.co. They have a video of a music video being 3D projected.
Awesome.
Using Final Cut Pro 7.
Ooh, old school.
Cool.
Here is just, there's just a screenshot of part of the video.
Okay.
And what they do is they pre-built these sets. It's like something maybe like 6 feet long. They use like tag board, and they like make these shapes.
Okay.
So for example, they'll make like a theater, and there'll be a stage and walls, and there'll be like cutouts of an audience, and it'll be all white, and they'll put it down on a table and then 3D project onto that. And so they'll have like 3D projecting like people onto the, like the audience cardboard and then like people on stage and the little blocks on the stage. Kind of like what you're talking about, I think.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I would really like to give some credit to a DIY guy that I've kind of been emailing with. His name's VJ Fit on YouTube, and he does similar to what I'm trying to do, and he's kind of gotten to the level that I think I can be. I'll never get to the V-Squared Labs by myself, because you're talking about using Resolume and 3ds Max and Maya and Motion and to get these extremely intense animations and modeling. But it's similar to what it is.
That's awesome.
Essentially, you create a 3D shape in Cinema 4D or Blender. You animate that shape to do what you want. And that shape is built based off the 3D set that you make.
Mm-hmm.
And then it looks like it's a fluid set. It's truly incredible.
That's
really cool.
Yeah, yeah, awesome. I can't wait to see some yep. stuff of that.
Cool. Awesome. Well, that was gadgets. Now, the last part of the podcast, we move into all things Hollywood and mainstream.
Whoa.
Starting off with
big day.
Philip Seymour Hoffman.
The late Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Oh, very unfortunate. We were all very sad to hear of his passing.
Very much.
Yeah. It was confirmed that in the autopsy that it was heroin and cocaine in his system.
That's unfortunate. Man. It really is. Yeah. It'll be sorely missed.
Yeah.
Indeed. I know one thing we were talking about is an issue that, you know, many people, when I first learned about it, had asked about is, well, what are we going to do about Hunger Games? Because he has an important character coming up in the, well, they're splitting the last book into two movies.
Are they really?
Yeah. With that, I did hear that he, well, I don't want to say luckily, because it is very unfortunate that he passed away, but luckily he only had about a week left of filming for it. Granted, that week was some of the more emotional, heavy hitting stuff. And if I remember correctly, we've heard that he will be CG'd in,
mm-hmm.
and it will be recreated probably, and his voice also digitally recreated for it.
That'll be really curious to see what they do.
Yeah, because there's some of that's been done before. Because, like, you know, on Tron, they have
the young
Jeff Bridges.
Yeah, Jeff Bridges, and also they did Marilyn Monroe. They remade it for that one in that commercial, wasn't it? It was some commercial where they digitally recreated her?
I don't think it was Marilyn Monroe. It was.
Girl, what's her face?
Girl with the long cigarettes.
Yeah, Breakfast at Tiffany's.
My sister's gonna hate me for it. I'm forgetting it right now.
I'm only not thinking of it because you guys can't think of it. The
collective aura, negativity.
Yeah, the collective negativity. what the heck? She's like a household name.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was a commercial where there was an actress who stood in for her on like a bus. It's like an Italian countryside kind of setting. And they went in and animated her face over, and it looked perfect. And the song Moon River from Breakfast at Tiffany's is playing with her singing, and it looked perfect. I was really impressed by it.
Audrey Hepburn.
Oh, my God.
That's what it is.
Oh, guys, we fail at everything cinema.
And we're here, lecturing you, the listeners, on cinema, and we can't remember Audrey Hepburn.
A collective mind block. I don't know what's going on. Anyway, so yeah,
probably Hepburn. The government.
Well, and there was a Volkswagen commercial that did that too for Gene Kelly, and they did a commercial for Singing in the Rain with the Volkswagen.
Yeah. So actually, do you guys remember in Gladiator they actually had to do it with the slave owner guy?
What?
Yeah, I don't know that.
No, I didn't know that.
So you know the old guy with the longer hair who owned all the slaves,
and
he got killed towards the end.
Hmm.
The last shot that he's in was like created digitally somehow, when like with previous frames of him in the movie, because he died during the shooting of the film.
Oh, and so
the last scene where Maximus is like talking to him, he has this weird kind of like movement on screen when he walks up to him, and yeah, it's just kind of bizarre.
I'll have to rewatch that.
It only lasts a few seconds.
Yeah. But. Well, it'll be interesting how well it's done, because apparently this has been done in the past and to at least some moderate success. So hopefully that this will be done more or better.
Hmm.
Yeah, and I think judging, but there's a lot of with all the work that's been being done in character animation, and even there's even new footage out there. I think it's just on YouTube. It's just test footage. It's nothing fancy. But it's, you know, it's starting to deal with the what's the effect with eyes, Uncanny Valley.
Yes, the Uncanny Valley
eyes. Yeah. Like they're working towards, you know, fixing that, which I think is going to be fascinating to watch. But it's also going to make movies like especially creepy, like even more creepy, I think, than seeing the Uncanny right. Valley effect.
Like an example is in Bioshock Infinite with Elizabeth. She has the problem where you can tell she's not really like looking at something.
Yeah.
Her eyes kind of go off in the distance.
Yeah. And, so, and that's what we need. Well, if you guys don't know what the Uncanny Valley is, it's yeah. It's when you're looking at something and you're realizing it's not real.
I think
it was a certain tells.
There's a really good explanation that I heard. It's basically think of a graph, and as something becomes more human-like, it becomes less believable that it's human. Until that's the valley, and then when it becomes more and more like think of
like cartoons.
Think of like a stick figure.
Okay.
At the very edge,
far left of the graph.
The far left, and as things become more detailed, more human-like. Like a stick figure is symbolic of a human and you understand that mentally, but as it becomes more detailed, you understand more that it's not human. And then that's the valley. It swoops down. And then when it becomes more and more human-like, it swoops back up and you believe it's more believable. Yeah.
I'm looking at the graph.
Like an example is like a mannequin, like a creepy, think of a creepy looking mannequin.
Yeah.
So it's kind of human, but you can tell it's not. So that's in the valley.
Mm-hmm. I have the, Wikipedia.
Similar to like a wax museum. When you walk in, you have that effect. Like
the Uncanny Valley is a hypothesis in the field of human anesthetics, which holds that when human features look and move almost, but not exactly like natural human beings,
right.
it is caused by a response of revulsion amongst some human observers.
Yeah.
Maybe this deals mainly like with robotics and 3D animation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, robotics is a good mm-hmm. example.
And talking about CG and stuff, another thing that's come up is a few weeks ago, Brandon Lang, Freddie W's partner, Brandon, mm-hmm. I don't know his last name.
Brandon Jayla on Twitter.
Yeah, Brandon Jayla. He was looking for funding for a Minecraft movie called The Birth of Man.
Guys put this on the thing, and I'm like, Minecraft movie? They're
yeah. making a it's more interesting than that. It got shut down. He was raising a Kickstarter. What? He had raised like $600,000.
It was shut down.
Down by Mojang.
What?
Because according to Mojang, it was something to do like, you know, we just can't have that much stuff going on without our involvement, is what they said. Mm. And then about a week or so ago, it got leaked that Warner Brothers had purchased the rights to a Minecraft movie.
Wow.
And so the first thought that came into my head is, how in the world can you do a Minecraft movie? It's a sandbox game. There's no story there.
Right.
Like, unless you do the dragon thing. And then I heard one rumor saying it was going to be live action, which then confused me even more. So how can you have a live action Minecraft movie? It's all, you know, it's 16-bit.
Yeah.
One thing occurred to me for a plot thing, I wonder if they could do something with Herobrine, which is like one of the myths and legends of video games, is this character in the Minecraft game that
was he was the main developer's brother who had died, and is and his ghost or whatever lingers in the game.
Oh.
And it's like, and in the patch notes for each patch of Minecraft, it always says Herobrine removed. But
yeah, so they're not doing anything to stamp out the myth, are they?
Well, yes. You know, David, it's interesting that you say, you ask why, how can they do a Minecraft movie? It's just a big sandbox game. When the Lego movie, it's just a big sandbox.
That's fair.
It's similar.
But at the same time, it's kind of a little different because, you know, there's characters and stuff within there to go off of.
Yeah,
like,
but there is to a point in Lego Movie, but it's more of a commentary about the individual who is using the Legos.
Right, are we officially changing?
I think we're officially changing topics.
Okay, so
yeah, we can shift.
I had something the Minecraft movie.
Yeah.
They could do something live into the key of stop motion. I don't know. Things have gotten really, really far with that. I think you know, Minecraft may fit.
Yeah.
You would need, you know, a lot of skill, but 8-bit would be able to work.
Yeah.
It would be interesting.
So now, David, you were not able to see the movie, correct?
Yep. Okay. There are some things
so going now,
on that I couldn't make
we
it.
We are
so I'm
really
a little out of this conversation.
We're really going to be testing ourselves for spoilers. Yeah. Okay. So this is the test.
It
test here.
It happens.
Oh, here
but
we go.
We're not supposed to do spoilers.
All right. So initial reaction. I really, really liked it. I had to see it twice.
Yeah.
You guys?
I unfortunately saw it when I was rather tired. but I loved it. For me, who a grand majority of my childhood was revolving around Legos, I felt very justified
Sean? Yeah,
I'm in the same boat with you. It just really encompassed the way I felt, you know, when I played with Legos when I was a kid. And I think a lot of the adults got more of an enjoyment than the kids did, you know, because kids have like futuristic Legos that always have instructions, when before we just build whatever we wanted.
Yeah,
you know?
It was, at least when we went to see the movie, or when I went to see the movie, a good majority of the audience work was
there
kids.
Were a lot of kids,
Yep.
Was that true when you first saw it?
Maybe. I think there was, I mean, there wasn't a lot. There was a few in the other theater, but
I must say I hated it.
I'm sorry.
I just need to keep up with my cynical streak of hating all movies that I go to. Yeah, well, just say I hate it.
David, you haven't seen it, so I'm going to have to discount your opinion. But no, it was great. I liked how it poked so much fun at itself. So many different ways. Like, for example, when the main character Elmet like wakes up and starts his day, he's like, time for some jumping jacks. One, two, and like they can't do jumping jacks, so it's making fun of how their limited motion.
That did surprise me. I can't speak to this because like when I first saw the trailer, I thought it was a stop motion film, because the big thing that stuck out to me is all the characters in it were adhering to the physics of an actual Lego minifigure, where they weren't bending at their elbows, they weren't clenching their hands or bending their knees, which they have in other Lego animated films
or in games. I mean,
yeah, like, or in games too. Yeah, they but this one, you know, they're really adhering. Like you could see the mold lines on their arms, like where the plastic would have been.
That was amazing.
David,
I
know that you were a bit cynical and upset, disappointed when you found out it was CG, but let me just say that it's true, they did obey the physics of normal Lego pieces, and I would say it looks damn near perfect. Like, it looks real. It looks really real.
Yeah. Yeah. I look forward to seeing that. And a really, really quick thing to interject here, another thing with the Minecraft movie is the producer for the Lego movie is in charge of the Minecraft.
Oh, well, that makes sense.
So this will be really interesting to see that.
See, because the animation too looks stop motion for a lot of what was happening. The action sequences.
Very much so.
And so, like, if something explodes, they have the little fire pieces and stuff. Like,
or and like smoke is like little white little
cotton balls or something.
The little single
bricks.
Circle
oh, really?
Pieces. Yeah, you know,
that's awesome.
Or like water is like the little like circle pieces. I don't know what they are.
Yeah.
Like it was all it all played with the physics. But I also loved the story.
Oh, yeah,
because the whole thing is like the main character is Emmett, this generic looking construction worker, and there's like a million other like him.
Yep.
And so it's about this normal, just ordinary construction worker, and there's this whole theme about him being actually a really special, important person, and how and the struggle between like self, like yourself feeling special, but also like society not thinking of you as anything special, and there's that, but it's also the story is layered in a bunch of enjoyable ways that you get to at the end. I don't want to give it away, David. I won't talk about it.
Well, we're also doing that for the audience, remember?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I would totally talk about it if.
And I don't have to beep anything out.
Yeah. No more sounding like that. We have a impulsive swear.
But I'll just say, in a lot of movies like this, it will just. Like, it'll set up the world. Here's the Lego city. Here's the Lego characters. Here's their story, and played out that way. But it's that way at first. But then it kind of goes deeper, and it's really, really cool.
Yeah,
I do need to. Also, there are a few numbers going out there. Right now, its budget was $60 million, and as of, I believe this would have been Friday, it had grossed $300 million.
Wow.
Already. Like, it is beating out a lot of other films right now. And it's staying, I think even last weekend, it was still on top at the box office.
Did any of us expect it to be this successful, or this good, for that matter?
I admit, I did. When I first saw the trailer, and ignoring the part that I was hoping it was stop motion, I was like, this movie's going to be awesome.
See,
I think they've been working on this too for like 4 years. Like, this is not like, this is a project that's been going on for a while.
Interesting.
I just got the feeling that if something's called the Lego Movie, completely endorsed by Lego, I expected it to be Pixar quality,
the best. Yeah. Yep.
So yep. I don't know. I feel like this is definitely Oscar worthy, if nothing else, because of how good the animation was and how much it convinced me that it was real. You know,
I agree.
Like
for next year,
yeah. Yep. But like the texture and lighting of the pieces was perfect. The animation made it look like someone was making a stop motion thing. Yep. The only thing that looked fake, obviously for good reasons, was the faces. The faces were animated, but that was fine. I mean, they did that so you could get drawn into the characters.
Yep. And the character development, I mean, it was just great.
Yeah.
Even though they were Legos, they totally had
Everyone was so funny. Yeah. Morgan Freeman as like the old wise man.
Oh,
brilliant.
My gosh.
What's up, David?
I'm going to throw it out there. I know I haven't seen it.
Throw it out there.
I bet it's going to get an Oscar nom next year.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, easy.
Yeah.
Which, of course, though, to be fair, and I know you're agreeing with me, but that is saying a lot because there is, you know, the statistical thing to look at of when movies are released.
Oh, sure.
And what they get as the Oscar noms. And this is going to be at the very, very, very beginning of the Oscar season for next year's awards.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting. But I'd be willing to say that it's going to get a nom for Best Animated.
Because like when we get to it a year from now, when the nominations are released, people are like, oh, yeah, that came out this year. I forgot. It's so long ago.
Yeah.
But I wonder how the... maybe this is going a little off topic, but I wonder how the FX or video FX industry, the people who did the movie, how well they're doing, because so many other VFX companies have gone under.
Yeah.
We don't need to go too much. We're going to talk about that next month.
Talk about that next week.
But just one more thing to add for my point for this movie. It really, I mean, it puts it on the pedestal of Toy Story for me.
Yeah.
I didn't connect that well with Toy Story. It was an amazing movie. I'm sure people that were older than me connected with it a lot more. But Lego Movie, I connected with it on like a whole nother animated film.
I agree. And Sean, I think I know why. And I watching Toy Story when I was older, Woody is just an asshole in the first movie.
Yeah.
And what's funny is in a documentary about Pixar, they talk about how Woody in the original script was like even more of an asshole.
Wow.
They had to tone it down. But the whole time he's like cynical and judgmental and whiny. But Emmett is optimistic and happy and struggling with his people telling him he's nothing. And so I think it's easier to identify with Emmett in the Lego Movie, but you definitely get that feeling because, you know, they're toys that are moving around. So it's got that Toy Story kind of feeling to it.
Yep. You also got to look at it and crazy. Just if you look at the cast list on this interview, some of these people from some of the reviews, some of these people may have only had like 3 seconds worth of on-screen dialogue. But like we got Chris Pratt, Will Ferrell, Elizabeth Banks, Will Arnett, Morgan Freeman, Liam Neeson, Alison Brie, Charlie Day, Channing Tatum, Jonah Hill.
Channing Tatum?
Yeah, Channing Tatum was Superman. And I think he's there for like, I think that's the one where he has like about 3 seconds of dialogue.
Yeah. See, all these cameos of these superhero figures were brilliant. There was a cameo of Star Wars people, and it was so funny.
And Batman.
Oh my gosh.
I'm Batman.
This is crazy. In addition, Anthony Daniels and Billy Dee Williams reprised their Star Wars roles as C-3PO and Lando Calrissian.
They were in it. Yeah, it was perfect. It was spot on. Batman, I loved it. He was like, if anybody has any black pieces, give them to me. I only work in black. And sometimes very, very dark gray. It's funny. Well, because David, you sometimes make light of the Batman kind of cliches. And so he does like every Batman cliche.
Fantastic.
I'm Batman.
I'm not
the government facility.
I'm not the boyfriend you need.
Yeah.
Something like that. Like, I'm not the hero that you need. Something like that.
But no, great movie. The Rotten Tomatoes score of 90-some% is well deserved, in my opinion.
I like how a lot of the confrontation that is in between the characters within the movie resembles a lot of at least for me, when I played with Legos, I always wanted mine like a specific way or whatever. Mm. Or I would only use specific colors for certain, only use certain pieces. And that's shared. That's shared by the characters in there.
It's funny. I remember looking, when I was seeing it coming out, I was thinking about when I played with Legos because I had a thing where, you know, I had a bunch of my pre-made Lego sets that I kept that way. But me and my brother, we had this table that was filled with Legos and we basically made a science fiction, like a base. On there, and you know, had landing pads for ships. And my character that I had that I always played with, and was my favorite character, was one. He was just called the Admiral. He had no name. He was called the Admiral. He had like the Johnny Thunder, you know, sort of safari Indiana Jones just hat and a cape,
of course.
and a Jedi cape and a lightsaber. Mm. But he was always the one I played with. Like I had a bunch of other ones I did, but he was always the one I went back to.
One last thing I wanted to touch on is there's just so many good themes in this movie. One of them being, well, so Emmett. He's a construction worker, and all he does is follow the instructions. Kind of like if you're a kid playing with Legos and you follow the instructions to build the pieces exactly as they're meant to be built. And, you know, he's confronted in a few times in a situation where he's like, there are no instructions. What do I do?
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
So there's that situation. And so, you know, people are telling him, well, just, you know, use your imagination, trust your instincts, but then he like puts two pieces together and he's like, ha, take that. And they're like, unless your instincts are terrible. Yeah. So it's really funny and makes light of these things, but also plays with a lot of interesting social commentary.
Well, and yeah. It goes back
overpriced to coffee being one of them.
Yeah. And also the antagonist's name is Lord Business, right? Mm-hmm. Isn't it?
President yep. Business, President Lord Business. Business. Yeah. Yep. But you find out, you know, kind of why that is as the movie progresses. Yeah. You should watch it.
I plan on seeing it this week.
I loved how it just kind of peeled back information little by little, like the super weapon, the Kraggle. Yep,
exactly.
That was brilliant. Yeah, I know. And the piece of resistance.
It totally was.
Watch the movie, David.
Again, I'm just anyway, saying, I hate it.
Who is
the
favorite character?
I love it, but I hate
my
it.
My favorite character?
Mm-hmm.
Emmett. I like the main guy.
80s spaceman.
Oh, yes. Spaceship!
The blue helmet. I had that one. It was always broken that same spot.
Yeah. It was voiced by the guy that plays on Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Charlie Day.
Yeah. Such a great character.
David, you would love that character.
The whole time
he wants to build like an 80s spaceship, and everyone's like, we don't need a spaceship. And he's like, aw. He like gets halfway through building it, and he's like, okay. And he like, and it all falls apart. But at the end, he's like,
then when he
I can build a spaceship!
It.
I can build a spaceship!
I really enjoyed Unikitty.
Unikitty was good.
Yeah.
Starred by Alison.
Yeah, no, everyone has been telling me how great it is. You know, my parents saw it, my siblings have seen it, I have other friends who've seen it, and
there was
a thing I couldn't make it out with the normal showing. So.
So any last thing to touch on Lego Movie?
Yeah, so it will be interesting to see, and it seems that they already have a sequel planned for release in 2017.
Wow.
Yep. Really?
I just saw that. Man.
Well, yeah, because they had a cliffhanger ending.
Man, that's a good point.
Thanks for spoiling.
Shut up.
Okay. No. Bleep that. Okay.
That's a spoiler. Sure. Okay.
Yep. So that's it. Let's see what we have to look forward to next time.
Yep.
On
so
the podcast.
Tune in next time. We'll be talking about the documentary, VFX documentary, Life After Pi. We'll be talking about the results of the Oscars, which is tonight. Gravity's going to win big. And then we're looking into seeing our next movie, probably going to be The Grand Budapest Hotel. Looks like it got awesome reviews. So that'll be next time.
Yep. So thank you, everyone, very much for listening in. And as always, we'll talk to you next time. Yeah.